Hi, everybody. It's episode 501 of PodQuest.
Hey!
It is Wednesday, March 20th, 2024. I'm Chris. With me is Druten.
Hello.
And Walnut.
Hi, I'm here.
How are you guys?
Doing okay.
Just wonderful.
Drew, you sound sincere. Rich, you did not.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Probably. Try again. Try again with more sincerity.
There's no sincerity in me. There's no sincerity.
I mean, you don't have to say wonderful. You can say bad. Like you just have to be sincere about it. That's all I'm saying.
Do you really want me to say I'm doing bad? Here, what I normally say is when people ask me how you're doing or how's it going, I say I can't complain. Well, actually, I could. I'm just not gonna.
Yeah, that is sincerity right there. I appreciate that.
Or wonderful. With the sarcastic tone, that's a sincere.
That's fair. As long as you're acknowledging that it's a sarcastic one,
oh yeah,
I will also accept that.
It's almost always sarcastic.
Well, start being wonderful.
That's a little hard to do.
Nah, you just do it.
It's a little difficult.
I don't think so. Scientifically speaking, I think you just do it. Like the Nike ads.
No.
That is Nike, right? Just do it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Just making sure I didn't get like my shoe brands confused. Could have been Adidas or something making that one. Oh, man. Well, let's just jump into it. What's on the agenda?
On the agenda, we all watched Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez's From Dusk Till Dawn. Oh, before that, I read all of this and then looked away when I went to go say that.
I was very confused why you skipped the first thing.
I read all of our points, but then just looked away and was like, I remember we did this. We're going to talk about Dragon Ball Super Chapter 103, where I guess they do a memoriam to his death of some sort.
No.
Or we're just going to talk about his death. I don't know. That's what you wrote, Cub. We all watched Dusk Till Dawn, Robert Rodriguez and Tarantino. Cobb, you watched Avatar, The Last Airbender, the live action series, which is something I've been meaning to watch, but the first episode is about an hour long, and I just didn't want to dedicate that time at that time.
They're about an hour long?
Yeah. Which I don't have a problem with. I just, the time that I went to watch it, I didn't want to have that. I didn't really want to spend an hour watching. I started playing A Way Out and got almost all the way through, if it wasn't for trying to figure out remote play on Steam. And me and Cobb, we got through the end of Jurassic Park Legacy, the Islet of Nublar. We finished the 12th act, or the 12th chapter in that game. It's a legacy game that we've been talking about over the course of the past year.
Yes, yes. All of those things and more.
Yeah, yeah.
This week on Dragon Ball Z. So we never talked about it when it got announced a couple weeks ago, but Akira Toriyama passed away at the beginning of the month.
Mm-hmm. It's a sudden head injury that just caused him to pass away.
Oh, well, wow, that's what it was. I never looked into it.
He had a brain tumor.
I heard head injury.
Hang on. Sorry, I just sneezed like four times.
Died of acute subdural hematoma, a form of brain bleeding, according to CNN.
So in February, he had surgery to remove a growth in his brain. A couple weeks later, he died after said surgery. They have not released, like, it's Japan, they're not going to release that stuff, like, just publicly right away. They waited a week to announce that he had passed away so that, like, his family and everyone could mourn properly.
Mm-hmm.
It's known that he had brain surgery in, I want to say it was late January or February, and then shortly after that, passed away from basically a brain injury.
Okay, so brain bleed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just remember seeing the basic news was a head injury, which, I mean, isn't uncommon for somebody to just suddenly pass away from a head injury. That's what happened to Billy Mays, was he bumped his head on an airplane and then died.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
He was in his late 60s, and for anyone that doesn't know who he is, he created Dragon Ball, he was the artist for, like, Dragon Quest and Chrono Trigger and Blue Dragon, I think, was the other big-ish one, right?
Blue Dragon, yeah, that was... He did Blue Dragon, he did...
Dr. Slump.
Yeah, did you say...
Dragon Quest and Chrono Trigger?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was looking up Billy Mays. Apparently, I was kind of wrong. He got hurt in the head, but then it was a heart injury that caused the actual death. But like,
and cocaine.
But I don't... The cocaine was from his past. I don't think it was current.
It was in his system, so...
Okay. I just remember the initial...
It was from his recent past.
It was his past.
I just remember the reports when he died was he bumped his head and then died.
Well, that happened. I believe that happened to Gary Coleman. Like he did actually like hit his head and passed away.
Yeah, like it's not uncommon.
Brain injuries are serious. Well, head injuries, I should say, are serious. But yeah, so like Toriyama was incredibly influential in basically anything that had to do with art.
If you've watched a shonen anime, he basically had a hand in it. Not like directly, but like he had an influence in any shonen.
Yeah. Well, I even saw things about like how he kind of used his influence to get other series launched in Shonen Jump. I forget if it was Bleach or Naruto, but one of them, I guess. Whichever one it was, the author had like pitched a couple of series and they kept getting declined. And apparently Toriyama actually like kind of pushed his editor to take the book. And it was after he had stopped doing Dragon Ball. So like he didn't have an active book going at the time.
I would say it was probably Bleach, but I'll look it up.
I think it was Bleach because I think it was after Kubo's previous story had been canceled after just the handful of issues.
Like I typed in, did Toriyama help? And like the third or fourth suggestion was Kubo. And you know, Kubo initially expected the series serialization to continue no longer than 5 years, which was starting as a weekly Shonen Jump shortly after the cancellation of the founder, but was rejected. Kira Toriyama, creator of Dragon Ball, saw the story and wrote a letter of encouragement to Kubo. So he at least like encouraged Kubo to keep moving.
Yeah, and there were a couple, like, both Oda and Kishimoto, the creator of One Piece and Naruto, like, put out statements after his death was announced, like, basically saying how, like, he was the reason both of them started doing what they're doing. So, you know, super influential. I've even seen, like, Western comic artists that were posting, like, tributes to him because Dragon Ball, like, inspired some of the work that they then went on to do.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond it just being very sad that he has passed away, Dragon Ball Super is still actively releasing. They actually just wrapped up what was essentially the mangatization of the most recent movie Superhero, which is the one where like Gohan and Piccolo both got new forms. And so this was essentially the final chapter of that arc. It was post movie, so it was original content that was not in the movie, and kind of wrapped things up in a way where if they don't decide to continue the book, it's not I wouldn't call it a satisfying ending, but it is an ending. But it's going to be on hiatus now for at least a month, so it is a little up in the air if there will be any more. But this would have been the final issue that that Toriyama would have worked on directly. And he hadn't been the main artist on it, I think, for the entirety of the Super run. He had been doing, like, plots and story and everything. I'm not sure if he was writing the actual, like, dialogue and stuff for every issue, but he was at least involved in the story and plotting of each chapter. Another artist, Toyotaro, I believe is how you would say his name, it has been doing the art. And do you guys remember in, like, the late 90s, early 2000s, like, when people would, like, talk about, like, Dragon Ball, there was that thing that people were saying was a sequel series, was Dragon Ball AF, and they would show that picture of what they were claiming was a Super Saiyan 5 Goku with, like, long silver hair.
No.
Doesn't ring a bell?
No.
So, that was, like, a big thing that, like, circulated on the internet, and it was early internet, so it was one of those, there wasn't really a way to confirm it. Like, there weren't websites out there that you could just go to and like look up episode numbers and stuff like that. It was fan art. It was not real, but everything points back to actually Toyotaro is the one who actually was doing that stuff. And he was doing it in like high school, making stuff that was at least like close to the quality of what you were seeing in Dragon Ball. So like, it's kind of funny that like this fan ended up being the artist to sort of pick it back up when it came back 15, 20 years later.
Mm-hmm.
I guess more like 20 years later, Jesus. But yeah, so I am just curious if it will come back and like what that will look like, because in a bunch of notes and plotting for like where the story was going next, like it would be the first time since Dragon Ball GT, which people are not fond of,
that
Dragon Ball was completely like divorced of Toriyama's influence.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, we know what it's gonna look like. It's gonna look like GT. People are gonna just go off the wall and ridiculous, and you're gonna have lines like, wait, that guy's not black, and stuff like that. And
that was Dragon Ball Super, dude.
Was that Super?
Yeah, that is literally just a bad dub translation, and it's also just taken out of context.
I know, there's a character named Black Goku. I thought that was GT, though.
No, that was the Goku Black arc in Super. There are only two arcs in Dragon Ball GT. It's two major arcs broken up into little ones, but it's the baby saga and the Black Star Dragon Balls or whatever, the evil dragon saga, whatever that one's called.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one where like the weird alien comes and like starts taking over everybody, turning them into zombies. And it's the everyone on Earth has made so many selfish wishes that the Dragon Balls have turned evil and spawned seven evil dragons that they have to go battle.
And that's when Goku was wished to be a kid, right?
Yeah, in the very first episode, Emperor Pilaf shows up and wishes him to be a child. And then he is a child for the whole thing, except when he becomes Super Saiyan 4.
Yeah, which is wild.
Yeah, for whatever reason, because that is like his like bestial state released or whatever, like he grows back into an adult.
Mm-hmm.
That was a weird show. I don't hate GT, but like it's definitely not as good as a lot of the other stuff, because it tried to, in the early part, it tried to recapture original Dragon Ball, but like didn't do a good job of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time it sort of transitioned back to like the Dragon Ball Z stuff, I don't know, it never quite found like the right footing, because it had changed so many characters so heavily. But at least with like Super is directly after Z, so it feels a little more like a sequel versus GT that was, I think it was supposed to be 10 years later. So 10 years from the end of Z, which was already, I think, 10 years from the end of the Buu saga. So, you know, a lot of time passed. But yeah, I'm curious how it's going to go. I'm actually thinking when we're in Japan, I'm going to try and find the March issue of the magazine that Dragon Ball is in, and like grab a copy of it, since it, I believe, is the final issue that he would have worked on. Like, I know most manga isn't really produced that far in advance, so I don't imagine he would have really been working on 104.
Yeah.
But who knows? Sad times, though.
It is. It's a bummer.
Moving on from the sad stuff, we watched From Dusk Till Dawn.
We did.
Yeah, we did.
And that's a fucking movie.
Sure is.
It is. There was a few points where I'm just like, this is definitely a Tarantino film.
Agreed.
It's funny that it's like it's a Tarantino written film. But I think it was Robert Rodriguez directed, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
And like he didn't really like tone down the super Tarantino-ness of it.
Sure did not.
It was Tarantino written, Rodriguez directed, and Cheech Marin.
Yeah.
Yo,
he was like three different characters.
Yeah.
And the second time he popped up, both Erica and I are looking at him. We're like, is that Cheech again?
Yeah.
And then, like it finally got close enough that like we could tell. I'm like, yeah, okay, they're doing this. I wonder if he's going to show up again. Oh, hey, spoiler, he showed up again.
When, at what point in the movie did you sit there and see, or sit there and be like, yep, this is definitely a Tarantino film?
Probably the hotel, maybe?
I mean, fucking the opening scene.
I mean, like, the opening scene had a Tarantino feel, but I think that so many of, like, those sorts of movies have tried to do that sort of thing since those movies, that, like, I don't necessarily like immediately think of Tarantino, but like once they got to the hotel and they had all that like banter and Tarantino himself being fucking weird as shit, I'm like, yep, no, this feels like a Tarantino movie.
To me, it was the dick gun.
Way more Tarantino-y before that.
I mean, the amount of time that he stared at feet.
There was like the feet and stuff, but like once it was the dick gun, I was like, yep. Yep, like it was like I was like, the whole time, I was just like, all right, like, it wasn't too, in my opinion, too overly Tarantino. Like, it did have some Tarantino-isms, but it wasn't until the dick gun where I was like, yep, that's a Tarantino film.
That's, I mean, that's fair. I guess, like, I don't know. It's the whole thing is just very Tarantino, and it's funny. Like,
yeah.
The guy who directed it did not seem to have as much flavor in it as you would have expected.
Yeah.
But I guess that's an early Rodriguez movie, too.
Mm-hmm.
Probably. I don't really know Robert Rodriguez's filmography.
I mean, he did, like, what was that?
He did all zombie movies.
Well, he did Sin City.
Yeah.
I think he also did the Desperado movies with Antonio Banderas. I think he did the trilogy, the El Mariachi, Desperado, and Once Upon a Time in Mexico.
Yes.
So it is definitely not. Hold on. Is this not laid out in timeline? Oh, wait. There's a Still Don't See It.
He was the other movie in Grindhouse. So he did Planet Terror.
Yeah, like I know like some movies he did, but I don't know, like, to the point of I don't know his filmography. It's like I didn't know that this was his third film. Like I didn't know. I thought maybe he was around longer, but yeah, it was El Mariachi, Desperado, and Dust Till Dawn.
And like, Four Rooms is in there too.
I don't know what Four Rooms.
I mean, it's on his Wikipedia.
I'm on his IMDb, and this is him as producer, actually. So,
not even as
director. Hold on, let's go to director.
So he directed one of the four things in Four Rooms. Four Rooms is like an anthology movie where like it's four different stories being told.
Yeah, I mean, look, he also did Spy Kids.
Well, so. That's what I was going to say. He did all of the Spy Kids movies.
Yeah. So like,
and The Adventures of Shark Boy and Lava Girl.
Like he's a great director and everything. I just like I said, when I said I don't know his filmography, it was more of like I don't know his timeline. I don't know where this movie lied, but I love Robert Rodriguez. He's great.
I always forget he did shit like the Spy Kid movie.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. But yeah, it's from Dusk Till Dawn though. Real fucking weird.
I'm 50-50. I can't really say 100% like. 50-50 on the fact that this movie felt like two separate movies.
Oh, I mean, it absolutely did.
Yeah.
And like,
it is very weird that the first half feels like just this sort of criminals trying to escape from, like, a job they did and taking somebody hostage and just being very quippy like a Tarantino movie. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden it becomes, like, a vampire horror movie.
Yeah. It's almost as if, like, Rodriguez was like, all right, Tarantino, direct the first half, I'm going to direct the second half. And, like, they just split the movie in half and did it together.
Yeah, you know what? That actually, that does feel a little bit.
Yeah. But it's a good movie. It's an enjoyable movie. I've only ever really seen, like, the last 45 minutes of it. So I've never actually seen the full thing. I always liked the last, like, half hour, 45 minutes of it. I just didn't know, like, everything leading up to that.
Yeah, I have never seen it, like, I've seen clips from the like the bar bit, like just like the vampire stuff, and I thought that was the movie. Like I thought the majority of the movie was them at this vampire bar. I did not know that was really only the last like 45 minutes to an hour.
I thought the movie was like pseudo vampire hunters. Like
I didn't know they were criminals either. I thought that like this is what they did.
Yeah, I went into the movie expecting mention of vampires throughout the movie. Like, I was not expecting it to be something completely different for the first 45 minutes to an hour. And, like, but, like, that's kind of, like, the good thing about the movie. Is like, yeah, it's just, it turns its head on itself completely halfway through, and it just becomes something different. And it's no longer a story of brothers trying to escape. It's a story of friends who weren't, like, a group of people who becoming friends who weren't going to ever become friends. And
were they friends,
really
though?
Friends. Not really friends, but, like, I can't think of the word I'm trying to think of.
Allies?
Allies or reluctant partner. That's really what it is. Like, they became reluctant partners in this scenario that really wasn't gonna happen. It really wasn't supposed to happen.
It's very, I don't know, it was chaotic in a very good way. And the two bikers that like kind of join up with them, like Eric and I are sitting there watching it, and I'm just like, why the fuck do these guys seem so well equipped to deal with this whole bullshit? Like, the one dude is like doing backflips off of pool tables and fighting vampires with a fucking whip. And the other one just runs up on one and just rips his heart out.
It's the ones from Nam, so of course he's gonna know how to fight.
It's just, it was just so silly.
It was. And what was his name? Sex Machine or something like that?
Yes.
Yeah, Sex Machine and Frost.
Yeah.
The one with the whip was Sex Machine, the one with the ripping out the heart was Frost.
Mm-hmm.
And man, they just fucking killed everybody by the end. Fucking George Clooney and Juliette Lewis are the only two that survived.
Yeah, I don't know why, but I thought I had it. I thought I remember that Selma Hayek was not a bad guy. But, like, she's in the movie for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And she's, like, a title character. She's a title actress, like a title star in the movie. But she's in it for a total of about 5 minutes, which is fantastic.
Yeah, like, she barely even actually has any lines.
Yeah. Danny Trejo is great. Absolutely.
I almost didn't recognize him until I heard him talk.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Also, he is in the sequel.
Is he?
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably playing a different character. It's
I know, I'm sure it's a different character. It's just really funny that he is, like, in the sequel to it.
I think Robert Rodriguez uses Danny Trejo in everything.
I was just looking it up because I was curious how much Selma Hayek had done prior to this. Mm-hmm. He also uses her a lot because she was in Desperado, which would have been the year before this. She also has like a cameo in Four Rooms. And I'm sure if I like look through her entire thing, she was in Spy Kids 3D.
Yeah.
Yeah. They work together a lot.
Yeah. I mean, that's Danny Trejo is in like two or three of the Spy Kids movies. Like he's Uncle Machete.
Plus he's in those Machete movies.
Yeah. Which I wonder if Spy Kids and Machete are the same universe.
I mean, it sounds like they are now.
It could be. I've never actually seen Machete or Spy Kids to know the relation. I just know that he was Uncle Machete in Spy Kids. I don't know if he's playing off that same character or if they spun it off to make a similar character. I don't know. It's something I'd have to end up watch.
Yeah, I've never seen the Machete movie. I've also never seen any of the Spy Kids movies.
Mm-hmm. They were kids movies as we were, as I was like a full-blown teen, like 15, 16, I think.
Yeah, it looks like they started coming out in like the early 2000s, right?
Something.
2001 was the first Spy Kids.
Okay, so I was 13 at the time, so it was like, it was a movie I loved.
You were the
right
demographic for them.
No, it's Spy Kids, not Spy Teens.
Well, you were like
a
teen.
Come on now. But I was 13.
Were you?
A teenager. Yeah, I was a teen.
No, it came out March. It came out March 18th. You were still 12.
March 18th, what? 2001?
Yeah. Or did you turn 13 in August 2000?
No, I would have been 12.
There you go, man.
88, so.
You were still a kid.
But none of my friends were interested.
Just saying. You were still a kid.
I wanted to watch it.
You were a spy kid.
I like kids' movies.
I mean, you like Avatar, so yes.
Avatar's a great series.
I meant the Blue People movie, but that too.
I don't hate the Blue People. I think it's a perfectly fine movie.
I just think it's boring, that's all.
I just said it's perfectly fine. Like, I don't think it deserves as much hate as it got. I don't think it's the... I also don't think it deserves as much praise. Like, it's a middle-of-the-road movie. I don't think it needed all the good and all the bad that it got. I think it was just fine.
I mean, I agree to disagree, but I will. From Dusk Till Dawn was better than fine. I had a fun time with it.
Yeah.
Like, true. Good pick.
Hey, I like Tarantino.
You know what's funny? I don't, but like every once in a while, like his movies work.
Yeah.
I know. I guess I like 90s Tarantino. I really don't like anything he's done since the 2000s. Because like Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, and like this are like good, entertaining movies. I think like the Kill Bill movies were fucking terrible. I didn't like Django Unchained. I can't think of anything else he's done that I bothered watching.
Inglourious Basterds.
Like it was fine, but like I don't remember any of it. And I never saw the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
That was also pretty all right.
What was it? Magnificent Seven?
Hateful Eight.
Oh, yeah. I don't think I ever saw that one either.
That I have not. Magnificent Seven is an old, like, spaghetti western.
They remade it, like, within the last 12 years. I want to say they remade it with, like...
2017.
Yeah. With, like, some people in it.
Denzel Washington, Chris Pratt, Ethan Hawke.
That's right. Chris Pratt had, like, two cowboy movies, like, back-to-back, because it was that and Cowboys and Aliens.
Those are really the only names that I know in this movie. They're the first three in the movie, the first three listed.
I mean, those are names, though.
Yeah.
Like, Denzel still adds a little gravitas to things when he's in them.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, From Dusk Till Dawn. Yeah. Now, are you guys going to watch the series?
No.
Probably not.
I'm not even sure if it's available anywhere. I kind of looked, and I feel like it was only one of those you can buy it on Amazon and, like, Apple, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, From Dusk Till Dawn. Yeah, it's not a, it's a buy, not just stream. And who's buying seasons of TV, especially three seasons?
Right.
Like, $20 a pop? No, thank you. Can't even buy season two.
Wow. It's not even worth trying, then.
You can buy episodes, but you can't buy the full season. That's some bullshit.
I didn't even know they did a series until I was looking at Robert Rodriguez's IMDb today.
I forgot they did a series until, like, I was looking up the movie after watching it. I'm like, right, there was, they did a movie, or a spinoff series that follows the brothers, like, I guess, pre that.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it's like a retelling of the movie. That part I'm not 100% sure of, but it's George Clooney and Quentin Tarantino's characters, just played by younger actors, because they're both old by the time the series was made.
Yeah.
Also, it's wild that this movie came out at, like, peak George Clooney being Dr. Doug Ross on ER.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, this was pre a lot of his, like, big movie stuff. Like, he wasn't Batman yet. He didn't survive that storm in a boat in that one movie. Forget the name of it. Fuck.
Perfect Storm.
Yeah, that one. Thank you.
It's funny. Everyone's always like, what's his name? Sean Penn or whatever is the most dyingest actor in Hollywood. But, like, there are actors that have died more.
Are there?
Yeah. I think there... I don't remember. I'd have to do a little bit of searching and Google searching. But, like, he's actually also lived in more movies than he's died in, that he's been in.
Well, I don't know that Sean Penn's actually died in all that many movies.
Is it Sean Penn or was it William
Sean
Penn?
Bean is who you're
Sean
thinking
Bean,
of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, did you almost say William Penn?
Yeah. I'm bad with names.
But William Penn was like the founder of Philadelphia.
Look, actors pick weird names, okay?
I mean that is fair. I just think it's funny that, like, your brain just somehow went, well, Sean isn't right, but Penn, last name, definitely Penn. I like it. I approve of it. Also, just for shits and giggles, William Penn lived from 1644 to 1718.
So definitely didn't die in any movies, is what I'm hearing.
No, but, you know, probably died of, like, I don't know, dysentery? Diarrhea? Yeah,
probably.
Yeah. Or, like, a gunshot wound from somebody he offended by not calling them sir?
Yeah.
Oh, he actually, age 73. I didn't do the math when I said those dates. But he died penniless. Yeah, it sounds like he just died of old age and had nothing when he died. That's a bummer.
All right, so I did the Googling. Do you want to know who is the actor who has died in the most movies?
Yes.
Sure.
It is Christopher Lee.
Really?
Who has died in 70 movies, or has 70 on-screen deaths.
I feel like that's a little unfair to Sean Bean, though, because Christopher Lee did movies for, like, 70 years.
I mean, Sean Bean has time to catch up, but he's only at 24. Danny Trejo actually is tied for second.
Really?
With 41.
Wow.
And
who else?
Was it Lars Henriksen?
Oh, okay.
So they're tied for the most deaths of anyone that's still living. Dennis Hopper had died in 48 movies, or has 48 on-screen deaths.
I always forget Dennis Hopper's dead.
Vincent Price also had 48. John Hurt had 43. Boris Karloff, 42.
Right now, Drew.
He was like Frankenstein.
For next week, we need you to go through find out how many total films all of these people were in, and come back with the percentages of how many deaths per movies.
Ooh, all right, well, I'm going to bookmark that page, and then we'll
because there's a chance that Sean Bean still up there. You know, if he's been in 40 movies and he's died in 24 of them, you know, that's more than 50%.
So it actually does have a funny you mentioned it, has a tidbit in Danny Trejo's that he's been in over, he has over 400 credits and has died in 41 on screen appearances. So he has a 10% death rate.
Yeah. And I mean, like, he's one of those ones where he does all those like small cameos. So he's got like in From Dusk Till Dawn, he's in it for 10 minutes total screen time.
But dies.
Yeah, but dies. Whereas in a movie like Machete, he doesn't die at the end of that because I think they made a sequel. So, you know, he's the star. He also doesn't die in The Flash when he was in like, what, two or three seasons of The Flash, Rich?
Yeah, he was in a handful.
Like, it's a reoccurring character.
Yeah, he was, what's her name's dad? One of the characters' dad.
Yeah, somebody that Cisco was dating, right?
Yeah, it was an alternate Earth person who was also a jumper.
Right, right. Man, that show was weird.
It's funny. I mostly bring up Sean Bean because I always remember, and I can't remember what the series was, but there was a series he had on TNT, I believe, where their whole entire advertising campaign for the TV show was,
I remember that.
Will Sean Bean live?
Yeah. It was like a detective mystery sort of show.
Yeah, I don't remember like procedural. When it was. I don't remember when it was. It might have been Legends between 2014 and 2015. The 20 episode.
Yep. That was it. I remember that show.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was an undercover FBI agent who changes himself into different persons for each case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was like, I always remember that about, like, and that's where like the whole like me finding out that, yeah, he's not the most dead actor. Like, based on IMDb, he has 122 credited roles at the moment.
So he dies in almost, like, every fifth movie he's in.
But, like, again, he does a lot of TV acting. So, like, how many episodes was he in a show before he died? And does that count as one? Or does that count as one for each episode? For instance, Game of Thrones, he doesn't die until like the fourth episode.
It just counts as one credit.
It's the end of the first season that he dies.
Yeah, so like that's the entire season. Is it one credit or is that one credit per episode?
No, I mean, that's one credit. Also, apparently he was in just a bunch of TV movies playing Major Richard Sharp.
I don't know.
I've never heard of this. It is apparently set during the Napoleonic Wars or shortly thereafter in like the early 1800s. It's a British television drama screened Richard Sharp. Huh. I guess it's somewhat biographical, maybe. Oh, yeah. Did not know that was a thing. He did a lot of those in the 90s, like a lot. That seemed to be most of what that seemed to be how he paid the bills in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So surprisingly, Christopher Lee, only 279 credits to his name. Wow. So he died in a third of everything he was in.
And like, that's surprising. I kind of thought he did more, but you know, he was a big like Shakespearean actor too, so he did a lot of stage.
Mm-hmm.
Which like doing Shakespeare probably died a lot in those too, but like they're not going to be on like his IMDb.
Yeah,
page.
And very specifically on screen deaths, the one list was.
Huh. Well, interesting. That was a fun rabbit hole to fall down.
Right.
Anything else to say about From Dusk Till Dawn? It's one of those just like over the top movies. Like there's not a lot of like plot discussion. It's just goofy and fun.
You know who the dude who Sex Machine was, right?
He's like a special effects artist, right?
Yeah, Tom Savini.
Yeah, that's it.
He's done a lot of like famous horror movie masks and just visual effects. And also the whip was a Castlevania reference.
Like, really?
Explicitly. Yeah, apparently.
Oh, that's actually kind of cool. That is kind of cool. I guess you guys want to move along?
Well,
yeah.
We got to figure out what our next thing is going to be.
Exactly. Rich, you're the only one with topics.
See, that's the thing. Last time we went over this, none of the movies in my topics were available to watch anymore, if I remember correctly.
So it was only some of them, not all of them. I did think of a topic, and I actually meant to like mention it to you guys ahead of time, so that there'd be a little bit of like a buffer to think about it, to not put you on the spot, Rich, since it's your pick.
Mm-hmm.
But I was going to suggest the topic of like adaptions, like from like a book or a comic or something like that, because there's lots of those.
There are lots of them. We could do that. I also have, I mean, I have just, I know a movie that I want to watch that maybe we could do a book club on. I don't have a, like a theme for it. It's also, it's a relatively new movie. It's a brand new movie that just came out within the past month that you'd have to rent to watch it.
What movie?
It's The Disruptors. It's a couple of the College Humor people are in it. And one actor you would know, Cobb, is Holt's husband. He's in it as well. And it's a comedy.
I don't I personally don't like College Humor, so I don't know if I would enjoy this.
It's not a College Humor film.
Oh, well, you said it had a bunch of people from College Humor in it.
It has two actors from College Humor in it. But they wrote it.
And that's more the thing. Like, I never found any of that stuff funny. So I don't know about spending $5 on something that I'm probably not going to enjoy.
I mean, sometimes you spend $5 on something you're not going to enjoy. Drew does it all the time.
Does he?
He's not wrong. I mean,
every time we have a movie that there's a rental fee, Drew does not enjoy it.
That is true. Hey, you know what? At least we do try to avoid those where possible.
But this is more leaning on a comedy and like a comedy scam type movie. I'm interested in watching it, like I said, but the only way to watch it is to rent it. Right now it's not on a streaming service.
Oh yeah, like you're not wrong. It is brand new.
Yeah, it came out within the past like month or so. But again, the only theme I would have for that is comedy, because that's just what it is. I don't really know much else about it, or I don't know, maybe revenge.
You're like, I don't really know what it's about. So,
well, like, I know the basic gist of like the two characters are like having trouble finding work, finding jobs, and so they come up with a scam to fraud a billionaire because they can't survive anymore. So one of them is a hacker. One of them will be like the face of their scam company, and they devise a scam to scam this billionaire, who is played by the actor who plays Holt's dad, or Holt's husband, Mark Evan Jackson.
He's also the demon guy from A Good Place.
Yeah. But yeah, if you want to do adaptations, we can also do adaptations. I going through my list right now, like, I think they're all, none of them, if that's what you want to do, if you have a movie planned out for that, you can call it, and then we can try to figure it out over the next few weeks, if you have an idea.
I mean, off the top of my head, I don't. Because, like, yeah. I said, I meant to actually bring this up to you guys last week so that we could, like,
well,
go into it prepared.
We could watch Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Oh, the movie?
Yeah.
Is that on anything? I thought that movie was, like...
On Paramount.
I don't have that. Why is it on Paramount? Oh, because it's technically Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
I'm surprised it's not on Netflix with, like, the cartoon and everything. And the new series.
I mean, it's, I guess, different rights or something like that, probably.
Yeah. Drew, you have Paramount, right?
Nope.
I thought you did. Is that the only one you don't have?
Wait. Yes, I think.
But also, that's not my option. I'm not, I don't want to watch that movie. I don't want to watch it. Look, I'm not going to sit here and say it was a terrible movie.
People really don't like that. Like, people bitch about the Blue People Avatar. Like, people hate the Shyamalan Avatar.
It wasn't terrible. Like, people, like, bitch and moan about, like, oh, they call him Aang instead of Aang. And, like, they nitpick just the same as they nitpicked the live-action TV series. And it's like, well, you have an hour and a half to 2 hours to fill an entire first season worth of content for. Oh, they left out the Kyoshi Warriors, and they left out this, and they left out that. Well, yeah, that's filler. So, but, like, they made a lot of big changes where, like, in The Last Airbender, the movie, the firebenders can't summon fire from their hands. They have to summon fire from what's already naturally around them. And so it turns into only good firebenders can summon fire right out of their body. And so, like, they changed some of that lore. But besides it, like, overall, in my opinion, the movie's not the worst movie.
What do we think the Rotten Tomatoes score is for Last Airbender?
10.
Richie?
I'm already looking at it. I had it pulled up already.
5. Wow. 5%. Audience, you want to guess the audience score, Cobb?
Well, I'm sorry, say again, what was the critic score?
5%. It's got a 5% fresh.
All right, audience score, I'm going to say it skews higher, and it's 20%.
You are correct that it skews higher, it is 30%.
Okay, still rotten.
Yeah, still real bad.
I'm just going to throw out there, neither of my guesses, when you factor in it's a 100-point scale, were that far off.
No, yeah. You were definitely in the ballpark.
All right, hang on a second. I might have something. Okay, I found something. It's an adaption. It's generally a well-liked adaption. Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind. It's a pre-Studio Ghibli Miyazaki film.
Okay.
And it's on HBO with all the other Ghibli stuff. Because I think technically it is part of their portfolio now.
It's an adaptation?
Yeah, it's actually... Miyazaki wrote a manga on it, and the manga came out, so the first few chapters of the manga came out before the movie, but then he slowly released the rest of it over, another decade. He basically, started a manga, realized he'd rather make a movie, and transitioned what he had already done in the manga into a movie. Yeah.
Yeah,
most of the Ghibli things are based off of, other stories. Howl's Moving Castle, I actually just read the book it's based on. It's an English book, like it's based in fucking the UK for part of it. You guys have seen Howl's Moving Castle, right?
Yeah.
Or at least are familiar with it to an extent.
I am aware of it.
So in the movie, everything takes place in that fantasy world. And Howl is just kind of a mysterious wizard guy. In the book, it's a fucking isekai. Howl is from our world and found a way to travel to another world and learn magic. It's fucking weird. He goes home at one point because his magic door that he has in his house that lets him go to the different cities, one of the knobs on it takes him back to his world, and the girl that becomes an old woman opens it and paper flies through it, and it's a spell that he has to go get back. And yeah, very similar in a lot of ways, but very different. But yeah, so we'll do Nausicaa, the Valley of the Wind, in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Sound good?
Yeah.
Sure.
Cool. I've been going through movie adaptations, and I'm like, oh, there's a bunch here that I've never watched that I could get into.
There are a lot.
I still haven't seen Five Nights at Freddy's. And then there's the girl with the dragon tattoo, which if we're going to watch one, you kind of want to watch them all, in my opinion.
I've only ever watched the Daniel Craig one.
Well, the whole series. It's a whole series. It's not just a single movie.
Yeah, but I think they only did the one with Daniel Craig, right?
Pretty sure they did. I'm pretty sure they did.
There is a separate series. They made those movies twice.
Well, one of them was Swedish.
Yeah.
The original movie set was Swedish. The Girl in the Spider's Web was released in 2018.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I honestly thought that they only made that first one and it just, didn't do enough to keep going. Oh, yeah, look at that. Okay, so they've only done two of them in over a decade. Is it the same cast in the sequel? No. No, it's not. Okay. Okay, that makes sense. But, yeah, I mean, The Girl with the Dragon's Tattoo was an okay movie.
I mean, I've never seen it. I don't think it's a movie I'd be... It's kind of a spy-esque kind of thing, and that's probably not something I'd be interested in.
Yeah.
I'm not saying not to watch it. I'll have to figure out what I want to watch when it comes my turn in 2 weeks.
And Drew, you can absolutely pick something based on sports, because technically that's adapted from something.
Technically.
Remember the Titans. Everyone likes Remember the Titans.
That's based on a true story. I think Remember the Titans is based on a true story and that's a stretch saying that movie is adapted from football.
So I'm just gonna say I actually thought Remember the Titans was, I didn't know it was, I just looked it up, it is biographical. I didn't realize it was based on a true story. For some reason in my head I thought it was based on a book about what happened in the movie.
Maybe you're thinking about Any Given Sunday or Friday Night Lights.
Maybe. I've never seen either of those, so it's entirely possible. Wow, that movie was in the 70s?
What movie?
Remember the Titans. I thought it was earlier than that. Like, I thought it was based earlier than the 70s. I thought it was based in the 60s. Yeah. In the summer of 71 is when the movie starts. Like, not counting the flash forward at the very beginning. Oh. All right, then.
So, Friday Night Lights is based on a book called Friday Night Lights, A Town, A Team, A Dream from 1990. So, Drew, Friday Night Lights.
But I also believe Friday, like, if we are not counting Remember the Titans, I also believe Friday Night Lights is based on, like, real people.
Oh, like, it's based on, like, a real town that somebody wrote a book off of?
I believe so. I could be wrong.
So I will say, in this case, like...
is a, yeah, 1990 nonfiction, yeah.
It's still a book, though. Remember the Titans, not a book.
Yeah, so that's where, like, we get the, like, Remember the Titans is based on... Like, they're both based on real events, but Remember the Titans does not have a book. So they're adapting... the argument is Friday Night Lights is being adapted from the book, which is based on true events. So it's an adaptation of a book where this is just an... this is based on true events. It's a little tricky to figure that
out. Anyway, shall we move along?
Yeah, let's go.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, as we said at the top of the show, I did actually watch the Avatar live action.
Nice.
Rich, I think you are going to, like, enjoy it for the most part, but have complaints.
What do you think my complaints are going to be? Because I roll my eyes when I hear people say, oh, Sokka's not sexist, so it's not as good. Or, oh, Aang isn't a playful child and he's serious, so it's not as good. And, or, oh, Zuko's is a whiny little bitch, and so it's not as good. Zuko was always a fucking whiny little bitch, so you can stop that one.
So I don't think it's actually necessarily the characterizations that will bother you, because for what it, like, you are generally actually pretty, like, open for that stuff. I mean, you don't hate the Avatar Blue People movie. Like, but I think some of the, like, choices they make for how they tell certain stories, I think, like, it's not that you're going to, like, be mad about it, but I just think you're going to be like, they could have done this better. Like, I only watch, like, so this it's 8 episodes and it covers the entire first season. So they do truncate a lot of stuff. They, in a lot of cases, it seems like they put, like, 1 or 2 episodes together per episode.
Mm-hmm.
Or 1 or 2, like, stories together per episode. And I feel like sometimes that actually worked out to its benefit. And other times, some of, like, the B-plots did suffer some. I think when you get to it, the episode where they go to the Stone City, where I almost call
Boomy.
Is that the crazy old king guy?
Yeah, Boomy. That's what Aang calls him. I don't remember his actual character's name, but that's what Aang calls Boomy.
I think that was one of the few episodes of the cartoon that I actually thought was, like, well done. Because, like that the revelation at the end of who that character was and kind of, like, that reunion was just... It was very wholesome and then, like, also very, like, deep at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the live action did that one very well. But then they also put 2 other plots into that one episode, and it ended up just feeling very cramped. And that was one of those story beats I feel like deserved to have a little bit more of its own breathing room, because that was kind of a big moment, like him finding that there, like, somebody from, like, his world essentially was still around. Because I think that was 2 episodes, right, of the cartoon?
No, I don't remember.
Man, what good are you then?
It's been 6 years. Or something like that since I watched Avatar. I don't remember when I watched Avatar.
But yeah, like, they can... it's like I said, it's 3 different episodes. They're not 3 episodes together either. Like, one of them was, like, one of the last 5 episodes they combined with it. So, like, it... stuff like that. Like, I enjoyed it a ton. Like, I thought the characters were more interesting to follow because they weren't... they weren't children's show characters. Which, like, I understand that's what Avatar is. Like, I don't like it, but, like, I get why they are like that. But the live action did, it matured everybody in, like, a way that made watching it more enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
And because, like, Aang still sometimes has, like, that childlike demeanor, but also he understands that, like, the world's shitty and he lost everybody that mattered to him.
The King of Amashu is 1 episode.
Is it only 1 episode? I thought that was, like, a 2-parter.
Nope, it's 1 episode.
Okay. Even then, like, again, it's 50 minutes, and they put 3 different episodes worth of story into it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's stuff like that, I think, is where you're going to have complaints, and not that it's going to ruin the show, where you're going to be, like, on the internet, like, man, they fucking ruined this. Just, like, you know, it's not going to be as memorable as it could be.
It's none of it is going to be as memorable as it could be. It's a live action adaptation of a cartoon that had a lot more time to develop the character. Like, you're giving a lot of people don't understand that you do have to truncate some of this information, and you do have to truncate some of these stories, and so it might not hit as hard. Or also, times have changed, and maybe don't make Sokka a sexist. Give him other problems for character development, but don't make him a sexist, because we don't really need that anymore in TV.
And he's not.
Back then. Well, no, that's the point. There are people complaining that Sokka is not
because
sexist.
They changed a core character trait of somebody. But, like, in this, he's more just insecure about, like, his abilities. And, like, I will say, like, because it's a Netflix show and it's only 8 episodes and they cram so much into each episode, they really don't get a proper chance to explore, like, that core three in a way that makes some of their feats, like, feel earned. Like, I forget, what's the sister's name?
Katara.
I remember, like, in the cartoon, throughout the stretch of that first season, like, you see her practicing waterbending and, like, improving as it goes. And I feel like in the live action, they just didn't have time for that. So it's just 1 minute she can't do anything. Like, she can barely, like, raise a little bubble of water. And then all of a sudden she's, like, pulling fucking ice spears out of the ground and, like, shooting discs at people.
Yeah. Like, I mean, again, there's that whole... There's a difference between animation and live action, and the amount of CG that they would have to put into, the amount of money they would have to spend to put CG for a training montage of her learning how to control water. Like it's a lot. Like, it's...
They use bending a lot in this, and not all of it is worthwhile. Like, there's a lot of fire stuff that they didn't have to do that is just, like, training and sparring stuff. So, like, yes, you're not wrong. Like, it is a budget thing, but I think it was more just that wasn't the story they were looking to tell.
I also think fire is easier to do.
Maybe.
When it comes to CG, fire is a lot easier to do than water.
I will say most of the bending actually didn't look bad. It was, like, the backgrounds. Like you could very much tell most of the show was, like, shot on green screen.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, sometimes it was just painfully obvious.
That also lies into an issue. If you're doing green screen, which means it's all fake backgrounds, which then that's more CG you have to put into it. And it, like, I understand people want the original, but people also have to understand that you're not going to get the original.
Yeah. And, like, I don't want the original. I think the original was fucking terrible. Like, I had an awful time with that show. I watched it because so many people say it's good. And by the end of it, I'm just like, this was a complete waste of my time.
I don't want the original, because if I want the original, I could just rewatch the original.
I mean, there's that too.
Like, that's I want something new. I want something updated. Like, again, the original. Well, not again. I would say the original Avatar: The Last Airbender series came out in 2007. Like,
I thought it was 2005.
2007 is what Netflix said.
That's the final season. Netflix always shows the last season.
Yeah.
Date, not the first season. So I think it was like 04, 05.
So yeah, but still, like, that was. That's 20 years old, almost.
Yeah.
At this point, like, there are different stories to tell now than there are back then. There are different things to build up upon than there was back then.
Yeah, and I think, like, the changes they made to some of the character, like, just, like, their personalities, makes more sense. Like, they show that Aang is a child, but also, like, he is weighted by, like, the responsibility and the fact that everyone he knew has been dead for over 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember it in the cartoon, but, like, did they ever introduce in the cartoon that you remember to, like, kind of his, like, mentor friend from, like, his time?
What do you mean?
So there's, like, the live action opens up prior to him going in ice, just kind of, like, being a kid, at, like, one of the wind bender places, like one of their, like, training temples where there's a bunch of other kids training, and he is already, like, a master. Like, that's, he's got the arrow tattoos and all the other kids don't, but all the adults do. And there's, like, one of the masters is, like, an old guy that he's, like, close with and, like, is both his mentor and his friend.
Yeah, they had somebody similar to them, sure.
Like, okay.
I remember him having like a kinship with an older gentleman, but like he, when you're the Avatar, you get treated differently.
Yeah, and I mean, this opened up like the beginning of the series is him being told he is the Avatar, basically,
mm-hmm.
and that leading to him kind of having an existential crisis and taking off and then being frozen while the fire people come and murder everybody.
Yeah.
But like, I thought that was just the way they did that was more impactful than I remember the opening of the cartoon being.
Mm-hmm.
And then just from there, it's like, yeah, no, like he understands, but also he's like 10, like he's 10 in a world that he doesn't really understand. And the people that he would have gone to are no longer alive. Like,
yeah,
there's nobody alive that can help him
yeah.
anymore.
Like, and again, it's live action, so you can't really fit in a lot of the let's have Aang act childish filler episodes like there were in the original animated series.
Yeah, exactly.
You have a lot of time constraints, you have budgetary constraints, you have like there's a lot more. Animation is not easy, but there's a lot more restrictions specifically to time when it comes to live action that you need to hit these deadlines. And there's just like, all right, well, if you're going to turn a series, which the first season is 10 episodes, and of the original ATLA.
No, it's 22.
Episodes. No.
The original season is 22 episodes. I watched them, like, less than a year ago.
I was literally just in there, and I swear it should 10 episodes.
No, that like, every season was, like, 22. 20, I'm sorry. Yeah, 20, 20, and 21.
Oh. Why did I see... Oh, I went down to 10 episodes, and it was... Oh, because of this stupid fucking drop down arrow. God damn it. Because episode 8, 7, and 8 are winter solstice. It's called winter solstice. And I know at the end of the first season, they're in the winter, the North Pole. And so I kind of just not put two and two together, but assumed. But then that's even more. Like you're fitting 20 episodes into 8.
Yeah, no, that's what I said when I started talking. Like, again, like I think they did really well, and I don't think you're going to dislike it. I don't think you're going to like bitch about it. I just think there's things that you're going to be like, I wish they did this instead of that. Like, there's some stories that they adapted that I feel like they didn't have to adapt, for instance. Like, one of the three stories in the one with the Earth Kingdom was completely unnecessary. It added nothing to the plot of that episode or the following episodes. And ended up making the other two stories that did actually matter have less time to matter. And I think they did it so that each of the three characters had a thing to do. Because it was like, Katara was off doing her thing, Sokka was off doing his thing, and Aang was off doing his thing.
Yeah.
So, like, they gave, like, each of them their own thing to do. And I'm like, that was just a bad way to pace out an episode. Like, I understand you didn't want one of your three main characters to not have anything to do, but, like... 50 minutes, like, you kind of have to just make cuts and make decisions.
Well, that's when you just have one of your main characters with the other character.
Exactly. Like, there were other ways they could have done it that could have made the other two stories stronger, and they didn't. Yeah. Like, it's not the end of the world. It was one episode, so it's not like it's like, oh, yeah, the whole episode is just paced terribly. It's every once in a while, they kind of stretched themselves a little too much.
Mm-hmm.
But to what I was saying before, like, him acting more mature makes sense. Like it, and it works better. Like, rather than him being childish and wanting to go play and do stupid shit like that, it's more he has that, like, not selfishness, but more like, well, I'm just going to go do this thing. And it's the thing that he needs to do. But he's like asking for advice and then ignoring the advice. And then when asked, like, well, how's he going to do it? He's like, I don't know. I'm just going to go figure it out. Like, almost that, like, I can't be hurt because I'm the Avatar, and like the childish, like, not really understanding that, like, that's not how it works.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, I thought it worked actually really well, and I'm glad to have watched the live action after, because, like, I wasn't sure I was going to, because, like, I really didn't like the cartoon, but I had heard, like, the changes they're making. I'm like, you know what, let's give it a shot. Let's see how it is.
Yeah.
And yeah, pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
Now, Rich, would you like to talk about, it's A Way Out, right?
Yes, A Way Out. It is a movie about, or not a movie, it is a video game. It's a co-op video game. The entire game is split screen. Even if you're playing online, it's split screen, which is wild. But also interesting, and it helps, like, connect the players on the two different sides to actually make it like easier when it comes to communication, but also lets both characters see the full story so that you don't, you're not forced to like play through it multiple times as the other characters. It follows these two guys, Leo and Vincent, who are in prison. Leo has been in prison. Vincent just gets to prison. And they're in prison for separate reasons. I think I'm getting the names right. I know I'm getting the names right, but I might be getting their roles reversed. But one of them's in prison for murder. The other one's in prison for, grand theft. And, the prison they're in is not great. So they plot, a plan to escape from prison. And then things happen from there. I went into this game expecting it was going to be something more like, not silly, but more puzzle based and more about the escaping from the prison. I did not realize how narrative driven this game was. It is extremely narrative driven, to the point where like a lot of the gameplay is just like, oh, it is like figure out how to do this thing. And then here's like, oh, here's a little action sequence while you're to fulfill you while you're like trying to run from this or that or whatever. But it is a lot of dialogue, which shocked me. I thought it was going to be more like puzzle and exploration sort of thing.
I would have assumed that too, based on like their previous game was that Brothers game, and that's what it was, the same deal. Like it was like a fully co-op, like, well, you could actually play it by yourself and control both people at the same time, but like,
yeah,
there's no real dialogue in that game.
Yeah. Brothers Tell Two Sons is what you're talking about, right?
Yes.
Was that them? I did not realize that.
Yeah, same studio.
But where was I at? Oh yeah, it's very narrative driven. And it's good. The other thing is you're only in the prison for less than half the game. For about half the game, I'd say. We actually escaped the prison within the first hour, and then there's stuff after that. That comes into play. You find out, backstory information. No, EA and Hazlight made a way out.
Brothers, yeah, I was just looking up. It's the same. Sons. It's the same director. It's Joseph Ferris did both of them.
Okay, but developer and publishers are different.
Yes, but the guy who like directed the game is the same.
Mm-hmm.
I knew it was the same guy, and I assumed it was the same studio, because I thought it was his studio for both of them.
Because like this, the team that did this is the same team that did It Takes Two.
Yeah, it looks like Joseph Ferris did Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons for with Starbreeze, and then left and founded his own studio, which is Hazelight, to make basically the same style of game.
Mm-hmm. So you escape the prison, like, within an hour. For us, it was, like, within an hour of play, and then there's just other stuff that happens, and you're just running from cops and finding out backstories. It's an interesting way to tell the story, because what they do is, between, like, major chapters, they will cut to, like, an event that's going on in this pseudo-future that, like, they're on an airplane talking about the events that are about to happen in the game you're playing.
Oh, that's
so weird. They're like, you said this or you did this, and it's like, oh well, you don't forget the two times I saved your life during this event. And then like you go like, so like it builds some story about like some backstory, but it's like some of the stuff they could have just straight up like had the future characters saying while you're just playing the game, at least some of the backstory, or had the characters just explaining it to each other while you're playing the game and not have those breaks. Because it's like, it's kind of a weird pacing to just be like, all right, this happens in the future, which then it's like automatically me, like, all right, well, you eventually get on an airplane, but why are you on an airplane? That's the question now. And it raises suspicion. We have a couple of running theories as to what's going on in the story. One of them was completely wiped by the time we finished. And it's funny how long the beat lists the game at about 6.5 hours. We played for about two and a half, and we're at chapter 14 of 20. So 6.5 is a little up there, it seems. But yeah, it's a good game. It's a solid game. It's got fun, like different gameplay scenarios There was one point where you had to climb a shaftway, and so you went back to back, and you had to time your X's or time your button presses to climb up together. And if one of you climbed up further, the other one would start to slip, and so you'd have to wait. There were scenarios where, like, I had a flashlight and he didn't, so I had to show him where to go and what to do, and then we'd have to exchange the flashlights between each other. But it also turned into, like, there doesn't seem to be a lot of asymmetric communication play that I was expecting from something. It's just, I keep getting ready to call it a movie. The game is just kind of an interactive movie. It's an interactive story.
And you get to do a banjo and piano duet?
I mean, we haven't gotten to that point yet, if you do. One of the last few things we did was we had to go fishing. And it was dumb. The fishing was just bad because, like...
Is it spear fishing?
It's spear fishing, but you don't, like, throw the spear. The character holds the spear and just drops it down. And if you're standing still and the fish come towards you, they will run away. So, like, you have to have one character trying to corral the fish towards you, and then you have to time it right to drop the spear on the fish. But there is... You have a splash command with the fish. And you can splash the water, but splashing the water actually makes the fish not really react in an appropriate way. We got stuck in this point for the longest time in just that scenario that Timmy actually went and looked it up. And he was like, it's kind of just saying you walk up to them and spear them. I'm like, I've tried that. I tried that while you were doing this other thing. I tried just walking up to a fish and spearing it, and they would go away by the time I got to them. There was one point where the fish, like, phased through the rock. But we did it eventually. It was weird.
I was just looking on the Wikipedia page for it. They list some of the mini games, including arm wrestling, banjo and piano duets, bottle shooting, Connect Four, spear fishing, wheelchair wheelies, and then like various exercises and sports.
We didn't get any. We did this spear fishing. And that's about it. We haven't done, like, wheelchair stuff. We haven't done...
I wonder if all that stuff are, like, minigames you can do in the prison.
That's the thing. It was very straightforward. Like, do this, do that, do this, do that. There was no exploration. It was just, here's the next chapter. Here's the next chapter. Here's the next chapter.
Could you have explored, do you think? Like, do you think you missed it? Or was it very, like, forcing you to go in a direction?
I explored. I don't think we missed anything, unless it all opens up in the last couple of chapters of the game. We explored, we looked around, and from what we saw, we're like halfway through. We're like chapter 14. So unless everything happens in the last couple of chapters, all of that stuff, we played horseshoes and we did spear fishing, and that's about it. We didn't really do much anything else. The one thing that was frustrating, though, when we went to go play it, was it says that we can remote play together on Steam, but there's no, like, download, like demo download or whatever, to where somebody can download a free version just to be able to play with somebody who owns it. We tried doing the remote play feature, and we just couldn't figure out how to get it to work. And when you install the game on Steam and run it for the first time, it installs EA Origin. It installs the EA app. And so he had to go download and install the EA app and then download the game through the EA app to be able to join me, because the EA app has a free version.
Right. That is stupid, but also not surprising.
Yeah. And like, since the game is always dual screen, like, it makes sense that there would be some sort of remote play feature, but we couldn't figure out how to get his controller to be recognized on my quote stream, because what it would do on Steam is I would set up the remote play and invite him to remote play, and it would stream to him the game. And we couldn't figure out how to get it to recognize his controller as his controller. We could play it as a local game off of my system, but we couldn't get his controller input to work. I could set him up to have mouse and keys controls, but then he would have control of my mouse and keys on my screen.
That is really weird.
And if he had a controller set up, I could have him have control with the controller, I think, but I couldn't have control with the controller. It was very weird. It didn't make a lot of sense. Luckily, like I said, we were able to just like have him download the free version off of the EA app, which just means he had to download the EA app and he had to create an EA account and log in so that I could invite him through there and get it to work. There should be an easier way to do that. It should just be available on Steam, but it isn't.
Yeah, I mean, that's what all these companies want you to use their loaders and stuff like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's like going through the EA app, all the games that they're on, that they have on sale are on the same exact sale that's going on Steam. So it's like everything's all the same anyway. So it doesn't matter. It's yeah. It was frustrating.
It sounds it. Are you guys gonna do their other game, the It Takes Two after this?
No, I've asked him in the past if he wanted to do It Takes Two. He has no interest in It Takes Two.
That's fair.
I've asked another friend to join me in It Takes Two, and I bought it for them, but they've been too busy to be.
There's also those Supermassive ones, like the Dark Picture Anthology.
Mm-hmm.
Those might be a little weird doing on stream. Like, you might have to like put a little thought into exactly how you're going to show it. But those are cool multiplayer games, even when you're playing like online with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you basically, unlike this, where it's split screen and you just see everything, you're both doing stuff independent of each other and like controlling the characters that you picked at the beginning of the game.
Yeah, I mean, if we did that, we would do the same thing we did with
Oh, right, the other games you played.
The escape games, where he would stream his game and I would just pop a picture in, basically.
Right, yeah. I forgot that you had done games like that already, yeah. Kind of.
But we have it planned out for the next few months. Once we beat this, once I beat Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, I'm jumping into playing Monster Hunter World for a while, just full-time that, and whatever else I can want to get my hands into. He is going to join me for a couple of Monster Hunter streams to see if he actually likes it, because I think I bought him both games over the summer, or over the winter, as like a thank you for playing games with me, and thank you for playing more games with me kind of thing. Thank you for joining me on stream type of thing.
Game that I love because I want other people to play it.
Well, he's already said that he'd be willing to play Wilds. And so I was like, well, instead of having you buy a $70 game that you don't know if you're going to like, here's Monster Hunter World and Iceborne that I do plan on getting back into throughout this year to play through. Let's play that. And if you don't like that, then you don't have to get Wild. But what we're going to do is do Monster Hunter World, as well as probably going to get Helldivers 2. And so on Tuesdays, we'll probably do Helldivers 2. And then throughout the week, whenever I'm playing Monster Hunter World, he can just join me if he wants to.
That's fair. But anything else about A Way Out you want to say?
It's a solid game. It's an interesting story. And I'm looking forward to finding out the ending. But I'm glad I got it on a sale when I got it. Or it might have been a humble bundle. Who even fucking knows? But I'm glad I didn't spend full price on it, because I think I'd only ever play this game once.
Yeah, I feel like it's one of those games, like, there's not a whole lot of reason to play it again. Like, I just kind of skimmed through the story, and it's definitely like a, yeah, no, when this is done, there's not a lot of replay value here.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Would you like to talk a little bit about Jurassic Park World Legacy of Isla Nublar?
Yes. It was nice to finally beat it. It got chaotic, those last two scenarios.
It did. Yeah, so the final two adventures in there were mostly Fallen Kingdom. Or not Fallen Kingdom. Yeah, Fallen Kingdom, right? The second Jurassic World movie.
Basically, it was the scenario 11 was Fallen Kingdom, and scenario 12 was its own made-up scenario that was like took reference from Fallen Kingdom, but like just was a way to allow every character to be used, so they made up their own story. Because in Fallen Kingdom, what happens is the bad guy captures all the dinosaurs he wants to capture and then leaves. And the lead characters stow away on his boat. Whereas in this one, in episode 11, was you're trying to help release rescue some dinos. And then scenario 12 was, oh, he is actually a bad guy the whole time, and so you don't want him to rescue them, and so you need to stop him from rescuing them.
Right. Right. I'm trying to remember, like, more of Fallen Kingdom, but I only watched it once and it wasn't a good movie. Like, I know, like, the first, 40 minutes or so are on the island, if that, and then it transitions to back on the mainland at that mansion with the dinosaur auction.
Yeah, and the clone girl.
Right. I forgot there was a clone girl, gonna be honest with you. So as labeled, it was technically Adventure 10, because it only numbered 1 through 10, and then you had the tutorial and the finale.
Yeah.
But it would have been Adventure 11 total, including the tutorial.
Mm-hmm.
That one was mostly, like, that opening of Fallen Kingdom of, all right, well, we gotta try and, like, save the dinosaurs before the fucking, before the island explodes.
Yeah.
And all the lava and stuff happening was a lot.
That was the finale.
Oh, that's right. That wasn't 10. That was the final one.
It was it was a lot, and there was a lot to manage. I think they did really good with this game. I feel like the mini games for this game are a little much. The action economy for these mini games is much. Like, the amount of actions you need to do to perform actions in the mini games is expensive, and it ends up requiring you to use tons of action and lose out on a bunch of different options and scenarios, or lose out on a bunch of different, like, turns and things that you can do, because you're focusing on the mini games that you need to do to get the highest score.
Right, exactly. And, like, in some cases, like, for the final scenario, you have to do the visitor center, the box stuff,
because
you need the boxes to trap the dinosaurs in.
Yeah.
And based on how that game works, like, you basically can't do that in more than, like, 5 rounds, unless you have multiple people working with you, or, like, a bunch of abilities that let you refresh.
Yeah.
Like, so Drew, just to give you an idea, one of the games is like a match 3 where you're basically, like, picking up colored tiles, and you have to slide those tiles into a spot based on, like, a directional input. Your directional input is based on the room that you're in the building, and there are 4 rooms total, and each room has, like, a different direction you can, like, enter the grid from, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to play this game, one action is to move into a room.
Is to move 2 spaces.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Like,
because that is one thing that you kind of messed up. You said one action was one room, and that's how you guys were playing that last one. One action is 2 spaces, which you could move up to 2 rooms.
Well, that's what I was told it was one. I had never played that game before.
Well, who told you that to move was one room?
I thought it was you, to be honest.
No.
It might have been Matt or Erica. I don't know. No. Literally, first time I did that minigame. But regardless, it's an action to move to the room. So, like, you have 2 actions. One action, you move to the room that you want to be in. The second action is you put the box into the thing. And
again,
then that's your turn.
I also, again, I have to stress real quick, because it is very... This is important. One action is 2 spaces. The visitor center, in particular, is an L shape where you enter at the top of the L, and there are 4 rooms. So you enter, and to enter is 1 space. So say you're on the space with the visitor center. To enter is 1. To go to the bottom part of the L is 2. And then to get to all the way the last block is another 2 movements. So you need 2 actions just to get to the last room, which may be the room that you need to move boxes.
And that's assuming that you're starting from that square.
Yeah, that's assuming, like, that you started in that square. If you started in a separate square, it would be 1 action to go into that square and 1 action to go into the building. And then if, say, you needed to get to the very last room, you need to follow that line. It's going to take you 2 more actions to to use 1 of your actions to move 1 space to get to that last room.
And then you cannot push crates in, which are random also, until you're in the room and have available actions.
Yeah.
So the game gives you a bunch of ways to refresh actions in the games. Like, if you have a park employee and they're trained, you can refresh one of your actions each turn. There are some cards and some player abilities and stuff like that that also let you refresh actions depending on like different things that you do. But if you, like in my case, I did not have a character that had those abilities. We had the park employee at another building that we also needed to get stuff done in to even complete the objective. And I'm in this room with no way to like minimize the impact. And I was just burning through moves, and it didn't help that the just unfortunately the randomness of that particular thing. I was not drawing the tiles that actually were the right colors, so every action I was basically just wasting a turn with a color that didn't help us progress.
And the way the mini game works is there's basically three crosses. There's a cross, and then like the middle box is filled in as well. It's kind of hard to explain, but in diagonal, there's always three reds, and you need to match three reds, three blues, and three purples. So you should always be able to figure out to get at least the three reds, but then the rest of the time, based on random draw and heart of the cards, you might not get
them. Yeah, and if you happen to have a board where, like, say the blues were all on, like, different edges, the only way to line them up is to push them off the board to recycle them into the deck and hope that you can get through the rest of the deck quickly enough to then cycle them back in.
we kind of got a rough draw with that one.
That is probably the worst of those like four little like building things, cuz the power one is just it's random chance cuz it's a coin flip.
I'll say my thing in a second.
So like that one's random chance, which does suck because it's a coin flip. But then you have the genetics lab and the communication building or whatever it was called, where that one also like the action economy for it is a little rough, but it's not random chance in that one. Like you get to look at the board, you're told what you need to do with it, and it's just figuring out the most effective way to get those patterns down. By being able to just know which two things you're swapping, which two things you're flipping, that sort of thing, which can still suck depending on like how bad the layout is just from random chance. But at least you're not stuck there just flipping over tiles, hoping for the best, while also blowing actions, moving to different rooms.
Are you talking about the genetic sequencer, or are you talking about the wires?
Both of them. Like they're both they have similar. Things.
The thing about both the genetic sequencer and the wires, they have set starting setup. They're not, I don't think they're quite random. It is set to always start like this, I think. Sequencer, for sure, I believe, had like a set, this is how it starts.
So the sequencer has four set tiles. It's like the four corners are set every time. The middles are random.
Okay.
The wires are always random.
Okay.
It's kind of like how the visitor center, the middle diagonal is always the red ones. Yeah. That's kind of how the genetics one is. It's like the genetics always has these four in the same spot, but then the rest of them are randomized.
Yeah. One of my biggest complaints about the game, and I never liked it ever, was the way the power worked. Because, Drew, in this game, you have location cards. So it's split up into what, five zones, right, Cobb?
Five or six.
Yeah, something like that. And as you each round you place the zone cards face down, and the characters that are in the different zones can see what they are. You can scout the zones to flip the cards. But at the end of the round you flip all the cards, and on the top of the cards it'll tell you whether or not there's gonna be a storm. And if
three
the power kicks out.
And it's random. It's random chance. Like you could have power go out in the first round,
yeah.
Or you might not have power go out until the last round,
yeah.
Like as the game is ending,
And it's the power will definitely go out every game. But like you said, it could be right away. It could not matter. But if the power goes out, you need to go do the mini game in the power station to pump it and then run the power. And it takes minimum two actions to actually do that, because you have to do the mini game to flip the coins to prime it. And then you have to pump or like turn it on and pump it if you succeed in the mini game.
Yeah, so like if it's much like some of the other ones, if you have a trained park employee with you, you can do it all in one turn.
What you got to.
That, to me, that's not my problem with it. My problem is there are some cards in the event cards which say, if the power is out this round, you hit a consequence. If the power is out, you get a consequence. But the power goes out at the end of the round, and if that card is in play, you gain a consequence. You cannot turn the power on immediately, even if you have it primed. You have to wait until your turn. Well, so there were... There I was reading
those cards that, like, say the round two card flips that. I was reading that as if the power went out in round one and we weren't able to resolve it.
No, every time the power went out, every time we had one of those cards, the power happened to go out that round as well, and we flipped a consequence.
Did we?
And that happened several times where it's like the power went out and there's nothing we can do, and we are suffering this consequence.
I think maybe we did that wrong.
I don't know. There's a lot of things we did wrong, to be honest.
I mean, that's just how board games go. Like, sometimes you're kind of just inferring the rules as written because everything is super clear.
I mean, it was similar, like, with Chapter 10. There was something that we needed to do where it was like, it was similar to how the last chapter finale was, where in the control center, or in the visitor center, you had to fill the boxes, and once you did the boxes, you got them. It was like that in Chapter 10, where you read it as you needed to do all three, and I didn't read it that way.
Yeah, and it's just how, like...
I think, and it, like, so we could have had less of an effect of negative things happening to us, because the way I was trying to understand it was... like, because at one point or another, it made doing the minigame pointless. Like, there was no reason to do the minigame. I'd spent two rounds trying to do the minigame, and then it was like, well, I got to get out of here and do other stuff because my character is more useful outside, and I'm just wasting turns here, and we can't succeed this minigame this round. And so it's just like, to me, that was honestly one of my bigger complaints of the game is action economy. It was rough. If movement didn't cost an action and you just got two actions and one movement, that would be, and if you wanted an extra movement, you could use an action. That, to me, would be a little bit of a better game.
Yeah, I thought like that would have made it a little bit more like, okay, you can actually get stuff done now.
Yeah.
And also, like, I get it, like, it did add a little bit to the, like, it was supposed to be stressful, but having these things where it's like, well, you're picking your characters, then before you know what's required of that particular experience. And generally, like, there were more than four characters to choose from.
Yeah.
And then when you get to the part where, like, you're learning what that particular adventure is going to be, it's like, cool, so we have to do all of these mini games to actually succeed in, like, completely. And none of our characters are equipped to do any of these mini games because we pick the ones based on, like, the plot summary, where it's like, okay, well, this sounds like we're going to have to do X, Y, and Z. So let's pick the characters that are good for moving around and herding dinosaurs.
Yeah. And, like, throughout the game, the mini games really, they only gave you bonus cards. That's really all they did. They didn't really affect the actual success of each section of the game, but it's now the finale, where the first time you go play the finale, that's your final official score of the game, and you can report it online and stuff. You don't know what you're gonna have to do, so yeah, it just tells you, you have to rescue the animals. Alright, pick your character. It's like, alright, well, we'll pick your characters. Well, in order to rescue the animals, you need to do this, which means you need this and that and this. And it's like, oh, we all picked characters that are movement-based.
Yeah. Yeah, and because in that final round, it's just like, cool, everyone's here. It's fucking Switch Brothers. They're all there.
Yeah.
Like, literally, like, Drew, so, like, every round you got, like, say, six or so characters to pick from. Usually at least, like, two or three new ones per adventure.
Okay.
At the end of the game, it's just, like, every character you've unlocked in the entire game is available. No one is dead. Everyone is fucking available.
Yeah.
And it's like, cool, that is a lot of characters. Plus, you get legacy characters, where they're not characters you use in the game. They're just, you can pick two of the characters you have used previously, or that have been available previously. And they have special legacy abilities that you can use throughout the adventure.
Yeah.
So usually, once that unlocked, it was usually one character per adventure. Okay. And you could spend some of your like budget at the beginning of the round to buy another one if you wanted to. And the final one, it was just, no, you just get two. Like,
and I think that's the other like negative of the finale is there's no bonus budget, so you can't do things like get an extra park employee, get an extra legacy character, get an extra, because they made the finale a replayable game. So you, they don't want you like to have, they like they should have just turned over and like you have X amount of money for this budget to play this, and each time you could do something different or whatever.
Yeah, it was very much like you can't get goats to help you manage the stuff, and I get some of that. Like some of that does make sense because you're in this like emergency situation. Like you're not hiring somebody to bring goats to you.
Yeah,
but it would have been nice to be able to be like, well, we have other people with us. Like we have employees that can help us do this stuff. Like,
yeah, it makes
them involved.
It makes sense for the scenario, but for a repeatable game, it doesn't.
Yeah, like, yeah, I agree.
Like to have a truly repeatable end scenario, to me, they should have like been like, all right, you have X amount of budget to spend, and you're not allowed to buy new this, new that. So it's like, you can get cards, you can get employees, you can get goats. That's it, really, is what they should have done. And not like, you can't do new roads, you can't do new fences, you can't do power stations or anything like that. It's just this, you can pick, or maybe just make it pick and still do a budget type thing. Like, you have up to five things that you can do, but park employees count as two, goats count as one, and cards count as one or something. I feel like that would have made the final scenario, like, it's supposed to be chaos and hectic, but it would have made it a little more interesting, in my opinion, to replay.
Yeah, like, I personally don't think there's a ton of replayability there, other than, like, maybe sitting down and, like, using different characters and seeing how it goes.
To me, there's definitely a lot of replay, like, yeah, different characters. Now that you know the scenario and how to do it, you might be able to do it better. It's not going to affect your overall finale and score and everything like that. You can open up at this point, I assume it's okay to just open up all the cards that you don't haven't opened before, because it doesn't matter, and that's what you have this game for now, is to use all the different cards.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, and the one thing we missed is I had the Kickstarter edition, which came with an extra character. Did not realize that envelope was in the box until we were done. And it literally says on there, open after Adventure 8. And it was Blue, the Velociraptor from the Jurassic World movies, that could have been used as a character for the last, what, three or so scenarios?
Yeah.
But I think overall, like we're talking about some of the negatives. Like, I did actually have a lot of fun with the game. Like, for all of the sort of, like, negative things about it, there were also a lot of fun things.
Yeah. It was a very fun game to play. It's just there's because they wanted, my main point is because they wanted to try to turn chapter 10 or the 12th scenario or whatever it is into a repeatable, replayable scenario. I feel like they kind of dropped the ball on at least on like some of the gameplay mechanics, like the budget and getting certain things. And I also feel like maybe we misinterpreted the rules when it comes to like the power stations and stuff, but I feel like the way the power works needs, I feel like it could have needed to work, but overall it is a fun game. It's an enjoyable game. I would replay the final scenario. I would replay the game again and just not make choices. But I had a blast playing it. I was happy to play it, and I hope we get to play more legacy games.
Yeah, that was the first legacy game I'd ever played, and like I did. I had a really good time with it.
Yeah, I love the idea of legacy games. They're fantastic.
Yeah, it's a cool idea. Like, and like initially, like when I first kickstarted, I'm like, man, $150 is a lot for a board game. But having then spent the better part of a year like slowly making your way through it, it's like, okay, no, that was like, you know, it was like 4 to 5 hours at a time. And we did about two scenarios every time. So we had breaks where like we weren't able to play for a few months here and there. But like still that, like even if it was, if you just figured the six sessions at just rounded up to 6 hours, like mm-hmm. that's a lot of time.
Yeah.
Like, that is more time than I feel like you spend with a lot of board games that are cheaper, because you're not playing them that frequently. Like, you don't have that, like, all right, we're going to play this one game every month. It's like, well, no, like, we'll play something else next month. In this case, it's like, well, this is almost like a different game every month, because there's different things to, like, aim for, and different things are throwing at you.
Yeah.
Because even as you're playing, they were adding the different challenges and stuff to it. Like, the weather did not take into effect right away. It was like, Adventure 2 or 3 is when the weather started becoming a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, as you're playing, you start getting, like, upgrading, like, walls and roads and all that stuff, which then lets you, like, traverse the island faster. And then you get, like, if you keep winning, you keep unlocking more and more carnivores instead of fucking herbivores.
Yeah. And so, then, like, the commands, the visitor center at the beginning of the game was a 4x4 square.
Yeah, that then upgraded 4x4 into, maybe a 5x5 at most. Yeah,
which the, or no, I think it might have been like, it wasn't, it was 3x3? It might have been 3x3. I think it was always match 3.
Yeah, you know what? I think you're right. I think it was a 3x3.
Which then changed to the cross, or the genetics lab was always, was initially like a 2x4, 2x6. It was two columns and like six rows or something like that, or four.
Yeah. Yeah, that it was more than four rows, because
which then turned into, I believe it was a 3x3 or a 4x3, something like that, or 4x4.
Yeah, they all got different, bigger. Like, yeah. I think the only one that got better was the power station, because it became one room instead of two.
Yeah, that's the best one. It was the best because the original power station, Drew, you needed to move two spaces to get to the actual minigame. And so if it took you one space to get to the space with the power room and then one space to get inside, you couldn't even throw the minigame until you used one action to move one space. Now, there's a character who, whenever they walk into a building, they can walk into any room they want. But, like, you don't get to use that character after a certain point, and then you don't know how important that character would be when it comes to the final scenario, because they don't tell you what the main goals are until after you pick your character.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of kind of FUs in that game, but like, in a, like, I think it worked. Like, we managed to win every time, and I don't think that there are definitely times where we may have misinterpreted rules.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think we ever misinterpreted them in a way that gave us an unfair advantage. Like, I think in some cases, we actually probably misinterpreted them in a way that made it harder on ourselves.
One of the times I played as Muldoon, he had the NVGs where I had the NVGs where it was like every time you walk into a dinosaur's nest or whatever, a home of the dinosaur territory, that's when you refresh once per round every time you go into a territory. I didn't realize it meant territory. I thought it meant whenever you walk into a dinosaur zone, like a zone with the same dinosaur. So I was, every round, I was getting a bonus action each round.
But like, that was fairly early, and those early rounds were not as hard.
Yeah.
But like later on, there were definitely times where like I had characters that had like, hey, like you get an item after doing this. And I just never remembered to draw item cards. So there were a bunch of times where I probably should have had like two or three items by the end of a round and had the one that you start with. And in a lot of cases, I was taking some of like the shittier items, unless there was a vehicle, because I kept grabbing the characters that were better for like moving other people around.
Yeah.
So like, I'm like, well, I don't need an item that's going to involve me having to do something, because there's a chance my action is just going to be involved with like getting you from point A to point B so that we can finish something. So I was taking like the random, like the fucking cattle prod or something like that, even though I was never going to be near a dinosaur.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I had fun. And look forward to doing like another legacy game at some point.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to say before we wrap up?
No, that was good.
Drew, anything else you want to talk about?
No.
All right. Well, that is probably going to do it then.
Yep.
Yeah. So in 2 weeks, we are going to be watching Nausicaä of the Valley of the Wind for our book club. And other than that, if you'd like to find more of our content, you can head over to www.one-quest.com. You can also help us out by supporting us at patreon.com/onequest. Can't support us there with your dollars? You can go to your favorite podcast platform, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us. All of it helps. You can also find us on social media, facebook.com/onequestonline or @one_quest on Twitter and Instagram. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/onequestvideo, and you can always send us an email to social@one-quest.com. And Rich, what is your streaming?
Twitch.tv/B_one on video game streaming Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday. It's probably still Final Fantasy VII up until 31st, mostly. But on Tuesday, the 26th of March, I am playing Poppy's Playtime Chapter 1, so you should definitely come check that out.
What was that date again?
The 26th.
Tuesday. All right. Okay. And with that, we will be back next week with someone else to talk about. Thanks for listening. Bye.
See ya.
Bye.